Do you think about making dynasty trades even while watching football games?
Are you thinking of player values when you should be thinking of family values? Then you may have a trading problem.
Don't worry, you're not alone. I am Dynasty Outhouse and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Brian Haar and I also have a trading problem.
Join us for the Trade Addicts podcast, where you can be with like-minded people and talk about everything in the NFL in the context of dynasty trade values.
News and notes, make amends, keep trade buys, all these things we will cover every week.
And don't forget Trade Addicts trades.
So when you're done listening to this fine DLF family podcast, please tune in to the Trade Addicts podcast.
Thank you and enjoy your podcast.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table going Nate on the place, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got their lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, you got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore.
Hello, welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name's Peter Howard at PA Howdy on Twitter. My co-host Jake Anderson at Jake Anderson FF on Twitter won't be joining us tonight. Instead, I have a guest co-host. Our second guest co-host of the Jake Has a New Baby season is at Dynasty Outhouse from the Trade Addicts podcast and Trade Addicts Leagues. Please check them out at Trade Addicts on Twitter or at Dynasty Outhouse on Twitter as well. So we got to talking about a lot of different things, and one of them was talking there about the value of Gurley and Henderson in the Los Angeles Rams backfield, and I wasn't exactly happy with how concisely I made my argument. Basically, I rambled on and then kind of drifted off, and so I thought I'd put in a slight introduction, especially since this podcast, I think the name of it's going to be, you know, Editings for Chumps. It's already too long. Outhouse called me out himself as someone who edits podcasts too much, and so I thought I'd try and leave most of it in anyway, so it's going to be overlong. But I thought maybe adding an introduction could add to that as well, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, the point I made on Gurley was essentially that while everyone, I don't know if it's very obvious, but one of the ways I make up my mind about things is trying to make an argument for what everyone else isn't saying. So while everyone was arguing that Todd Gurley was fine, I tried to make an argument that Scott Barrett's yards after catch metrics said that Darrell Henderson should be a late first round pick. Now we're in my small bubble, everyone seems to be saying that Darrell Henderson is the guy you really want. I'm trying to make an argument that you should keep Todd Gurley. I know that seems almost contradictory, but it's part of, I guess, my decision-making process, especially on Twitter, which is really where I just throw stuff out and see how I feel about it. I test ideas. It's my draft board, essentially. So I think I got 90% of my argument for Gurley in this episode, but you can even hear it in the episode. Towards the end of it, even I don't seem to be able to agree, or I'm not very excited about the argument I'm making. And that's essentially what happened. I made the best argument I could that Gurley is still a top five running back and Darrell Henderson is being overvalued. I really do think I got at least 90% of the best argument you can for Gurley into this episode. But once I've constructed it and I examine both arguments, the for and against the idea that Todd Gurley is a top five running back anymore, I've kind of ended up liking the other side better. Like, I still think Todd Gurley's great. I think doctors' predictions that he could play only another 2 to 3 years is a probably a very specific doctor projection. But for fantasy football, we really only expect 3 great years out of a running back from the get-go. So 3 years from now doesn't seem that concerning. However, given the off-season moves that the Rams made, considering that he traded up, and everything else, I think their ADPs are actually fine right now, and I kind of want to underline that. Gurley's going as the running back 9 or the running back 10, depending on whether you look at Dynasty ADP or Redraft ADP, and that seems fine. Like, the significant risk that some of this noise, some of this smoke, has fire underneath it, and so I kind of understand that. That also means Todd Gurley has significant upside, However, if he is a top 5 running back and you take him in the top 12 running backs, you have gained, like, league-winning opportunity. It's the same with Darrell Henderson. Drafting him outside the top 100 players in ADP right now, and also in the late first round, gives you significant upside for both. In fact, what I think right now is they actually have some wiggle room, and this might actually be hot compared to some people, even on the anti-Gurley train, in that I think we can put Darrell Henderson in that top 5 conversation. Rookie drafts for me are basically breaking down between the top 5 picks, and then there's one big tier from the middle of the first round to the middle of the second round, where I want J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and I want Andy Isabella. So what I think I'm going to do right for myself is put Darrell Henderson into that top running back conversation. He's in there with Montgomery, Sanders, and Jacobs. And honestly, it's kind of a coin flip between what you like between them. N'Keal Harry is my clear number one wide receiver, the only one who enters that initial tier in this draft class. Now, for myself, I want Harry so much, I'm putting him 101, but positional value and likelihood of producing in this first year definitely means you should take a running back, but where there's 4 of them and it's kind of hard to decide between them, it's made it easier for me to lean towards Harry. But if I'm giving advice, I'd say pick your favorite running back of those 4 running backs. But it's actually fairly significant for me to put Henderson in that group, because it means he's in that top 5 tier. He's no longer in that muddy big second tier from the middle of the first round to the middle of the second round. And that's higher than I think I've seen most people talking about him. Gurley, on the other hand, I think he's right there. Like, if he drops much further, he's going to just be value and the risk is going to disappear. Like, I still want him at the end of the first round in startups. I still want him in the top 10, top 12 running backs. There is significant risk, but the upside is fairly likely to at least have a high floor. And there is that potential of him being something like Todd Gurley, since he is Todd Gurley again, which gives you incredible upside as well. And so I think that value is fine. My concern now resides in where those ADPs are going to go. If Gurley keeps dropping and Henderson keeps increasing, my value meter is going to flip over. But for right now, I'm going to have to come in, and I hate it. I can't tell you how much I hate coming in on a bandwagon that's not for an undrafted free agent, at least, because I love those kind of bandwagons, but this kind of bandwagon is normally not the one I try to join. But I think that's just where the logic is landing me, having examined both of the best arguments I can make for either side. So I just wanted to clear that up in a 6-minute introduction, which is way too long. Apologize for that. Let's get to the episode, hear Dynasty Outhouse talk for a while, because he's much more fun than me, obviously. Thanks again to Outhouse for coming on the show. Thanks to you guys for listening. Let's get to it. Thanks.
You want to start over?
No, I really don't. I'm just getting you in the mood for the incredibly difficult, awkward, meandering way that I talk to people.
Now you know what's coming. It was so much fun.
Oh yeah, you've experienced it, right?
Hey, yeah, it was our most listened to show for a while.
So I hate the I'm pretending to be a radio guy parts, because I'm not. Anyway, good start. I quit. I just Outhouse made me retire. No. Hello and welcome to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name's Peter Howard at PA Howdy on Twitter. I'm normally joined by my co-host at Jake Anderson at Jake Anderson FF on Twitter. Unfortunately, he's not available right now because he's too busy dadding. I'll remember the right verb, but they've got a new baby in the house, and that pretty much means that Jake has less sleep than I do under his belt, which is actually a pretty hard accomplishment to achieve. So congratulations to Jake for beating that record, I guess. This intro already went off the rails, so I'm just going to move right the hell on to the fact that my co-host is at Dynasty Outhouse, otherwise known as Mr. Outhouse, Outhouse, or any version of Outhouse that you care to call him, according to him in the pre-show. Thanks for joining me, Mr. Outhouse. Who are you? What do you do? What's your podcast called? Tell us.
It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, Jake, congrats on the sex. So good job on that.
I hadn't even thought of going there, man.
I'm at Dynasty.
Like, Jake was feeling pretty confident that once again there's going to be another Crossroads episode where he doesn't actually get zinged, and then you come with that. That's fantastic.
Wouldn't be a Crossroads episode if Jake didn't get zinged, so there you go.
Actually, I think we're 0 for 37. I don't even know how many episodes we've on. We've really gone off the rails without Jake here. If no one knows, my podcast studio now looks like a hurricane came through it. There's like blaring sirens behind me, people running around with papers in the background. Like, we're really in crisis mode right here, and we're glad to have Dynasty Outhouse on the show to try and save me, because the TradeX podcast is as professional as it gets. It's wonderful to listen to, and it's a whole bunch of fun. I went on it once and completely ruined all of that, and so I thought I'd have you on this show so you could maybe do the reverse.
No, I completely plan on getting my vengeance and not letting you stay on point whatsoever.
That's going to be so easy to do, but you go for it. I think it could be fun. Why not? But yeah, we honestly don't have a subject. Like, I didn't have a subject last episode either, but like, it just kind of came together at the last minute that the questions ordered up, and then I was really hoping for another miracle on show two without Jake, but you came on, and I was like, nah, nothing turned up. Damn. Where is my organizational miracle? But I think we're going to start off talking about the question I've been asked most about on Twitter today, quite literally. And that's talking about Todd Gurley and the Henderson situation, as I think it's been officially called. Like, I think that's the hashtag, the Henderson situation. Okay, so with Darrell Henderson being drafted in the third round at pick 6 in this year's NFL draft, and actually the Los Angeles Rams trading several picks to move up to go get him, there's been a lot of concern. In this offseason, the team has been more than happy to feed into the epic spiral that is the offseason of thinking things have changed, even though literally nothing could have changed in the last couple of weeks, to send Darrell Henderson's ADP skyrocketing. Even I suggested, like at the start of the rookie season, just after the draft, that Henderson could be a late first-round pick based off of Scott Barrett's work, who looks at yards created by the player themselves, so taking the situation in which they got the ball into account. How many of the yards were created by the player rather than the situation or the offensive line or anything else. Outhouse is getting a full-on vision here of how I talk mostly with my hands. Sorry about that. It must be kind of 3D creepy to see my hands continuing claw-like reach towards you, but we're moving on. Since then, there was no laughter there. I was really hoping you were going to carry me, but anyway. Since then, the hype has only grown to the point that Twitter is in a full-on frenzy, and even talking about Todd Gurley being a more likely backup to either Malcolm Brown or Darrell Henderson. In fact, it's become more of a battle of which backup running back is actually the pick that you want instead of Todd Gurley. Now, none of them are being drafted above Todd Gurley yet, as far as I can tell. but, you know, it's early yet, according to ADP. But, I don't... Based on Twitter, which is not something you should base anything off ever, but it's almost starting to feel like it's not long before Todd Gurley is being drafted below Darrell Henderson. Am I exaggerating too much about the hype going around about Henderson right now, Mr. Outhouse?
I faded in and out. Ryan McDowell tweeted out the June ADP, and Todd Gurley fell out of the first round. He was tied at 13th. Yeah, the dude's not going to be a workhorse anymore, and people think that's the end of the world. It's, I call it the Dez Bryant paradox. Dez Bryant was this big wide receiver one, and the second he started fading a bit, everyone just thought he was complete and utter trash without ever thinking maybe he could be a solid mid-wide receiver too. Like, there's no such thing. Once you're a stud or you're nothing. I think Todd Gurley is not going to be a workhorse back anymore. I think that's obvious at this point. He said he's going to lose some weight to play a little lighter, to less stress on his knees. And, I mean, Gurley with 18 touches a game is still a low-end running back one, high-end running back two. So, I mean, he's still super worth an early startup pick. He's maybe not worth first round anymore. But I also don't want to take shots at whoever the hell his backup's going to be, because chances are Malcolm Brown's going to be his backup, but then Henderson's going to be some sort of spellback. Like, he's going to be Gio Bernard or something. And I'll rather pay for later, knowing what their roles are, than pay a first now for Henderson and him kind of being trash. Not the player, just his usage.
Right. I don't mind if we're playing it like the Green Bay wide receiver situation where everyone almost has a shot to become
and you're paying a third for them.
Wide receiver with Aaron Rodgers. Not top 24. Let's not get crazy. But there is a chance that one of them is as good as Randall Cobb. We just don't know enough about the players in that mix. So taking a shot on your favorite one in the right draft round is fine. I normally end up with Jamon Moore because that seems to be the only guy going in the right draft round based on how I view their prospect profiles. But, you know,
that's why we love
I'm also crazy. Or stupid, or both, one or the other. But Todd Gurley himself, I think the certainty, like, this is a problem with us all having relatively small bubbles. Like, before this increase, like, the big names start talking about them, in ADP, or at least Twitter hype started, I was very much on the Darrell Henderson was a fair end of the first round pick if you really wanted to reach, almost make a statement, make an attempt at a strong upside. In this draft class, that seemed sound to me. And Jake wasn't entirely on board with it, if I remember right, comparing his ranks with my ranks. But, like, I understood it. Like, as you said, I don't think Henderson's ADP has gone much higher than that, and Gurley's is still at the end of the first round, which, you know, it still seems a little low to me for a guy who should be a top 12 running back in 2019. But the more people say it's almost a certainty in my small bubble, the more I'm inclined to go, actually, now I want to go the other way. Because I'm... what's the word? Asshole.
Innovative. That's a better word.
I just don't want to do what people tell me to do. There you go. So the minute my friends are on board, I'm off boards. And that's the problem with my small bubble. As long as our ADPs are in this range, I'm probably still on the same page as everyone. But it really feels strong to me, especially looking at some of the hype around the best ball guys, who tend to drive a lot of the seasonal ADP by the time we get to August. We haven't seen our August ADP, but still. That Gurley may even drop to the mid-second, and Henderson really might climb to the third round. They might Kareem Hunt it and hope for that bigger upside. But Kareem Hunt never had someone like Gurley in front of him, and to me, if he gets that far, I'm out. And just to point out what you were saying about Gurley, because, you know, I almost let you talk there for a second, sorry. Top five running backs over the last 8 years or so have averaged about a 60% share of rushing attempts in their own offense. I tweeted out a picture, like I do fairly regularly, so that means nothing to anyone, even if you're paying attention to my timeline. But over the last 6 seasons, only 2 have had a rushing attempt share over 70%. Which is actually fairly consistent if you look at an 18-year average. There's more examples of over 70 or 80%, like if you get towards 2000, but still, between 60 and 70% is by far the most common. Gurley last year had about a 62% rushing share, I think, in 2018, right? Last year was 2018. But top 12 running backs only drop by about 3% on average. So Gurley can stand to lose 5% of his rushing attempts, which is a substantial amount of rushing attempts, I will admit, for the Los Angeles Rams in a powerful offense that gets in the red zone a lot, but still, and still be a top 12 back. And that makes the backup running back more of a flex guy. I think people are going to start thinking that he's got Kareem Hunt upside, which could happen, but you have to assume Gurley gets injured for that. It doesn't happen unless Gurley gets injured. If he isn't injured, that he's a top 12 running back. I'm pretty confident in that. And whoever is number 2 is, you know, you might get 2 usable weeks out of them. Does that make sense?
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, Henderson is good. Scott Barrett, I agree with you liking him because Scott Barrett said so. Like, I'm all there for that. But, I mean, Todd Gurley is still alive. And... you know, the difference between Hunt and Henderson is that Spencer Ware and Todd Gurley aren't really the same thing, even before Ware got hurt. I mean, we thought Hunt was taking over, but that was because the only thing in his play in his way was Spencer Ware. And screw ex-Seahawks wide receivers and running backs that go other places and end up doing really well. Just putting that out there. Because there's way too many of them. So Henderson, he could have some standalone value. That's fine. But no, him having what Hunt... Well, was, I guess, last year. We'll call it the year before. Upside, yeah. You literally, he's not overtaking Gurley. Gurley will need to get injured and be completely out for Henderson to be a thing. And this is also overlooking the Rams matching Malcolm Brown's offer sheet. You know, so they wanted him there. They paid for him to be there. So he's not nothing.
Do you put any stock to the problem that that happened before the draft, so they didn't know they could get Henderson, and now we should value him less because, you know, that happened before the draft?
Money's money.
I suck at running back. That's why I'm more than open to being wrong about this. Like, there are some things with running back which are just a little atypical to logic, shall we say. Like, the way they're used for a start, but also, like, if it was a wide receiver, a tight end, or quarterback, I'd feel very confident in saying, here's a player who's proved more than adequate in the role that he was given last year, and that gives him the bump. But with running back, so much of the volume, which is what you want to start tracking to try and figure out who you want, the volume, but so much of the volume seems to be given rather than earned, that it's almost harder for me to say that with someone like Malcolm Brown. Yeah, he did well, maybe he earned it, but if they want to give it to Henderson, Henderson just gets it. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Cool. Okay. It reminds me of the Philip Lindsay situation. I know we said we're going to try and move on to rookies, but, like, I love Lindsay, and I love undrafted guys, and I love the outliers. Like, that's how what really got me excited and started crunching stats. I said it before, but it's hard to remember some days because I end up arguing against undrafted free agents so often. Because the whole thing that I started to crunch was, how likely was it they hit, and then how likely is it that they sustain that hit? And the numbers just get gut-wrenchingly crushing the more you look at it. Like, I want Cameron Meredith and Tyra Williams to be some of the most highly drafted wide receivers right now, but it ain't going to happen. And I don't think it's because they didn't earn or display what they needed to really earn a bigger or better feature role. Or David Moore, who's going to get crushed this year based on what the team did with the draft and what they're doing with their offseason moves as well. Like, I think these guys could. I just don't think they're Julio Jones level that they're going to make the NFL give them that role. They're just good. Like, Doug Baldwin was significantly better than those guys in order to make the Seahawks. And I know everyone wants to say the Seahawks are just good at giving opportunity to low-drafted guys, and I'm sure they take pride in that. But Chris Carson had a 1,000-yard season. The first thing they did is go out and draft a first-round running back.
And then not play him.
I mean,
that's my biggest fear with Philip Lindsay. The wrist injury and missing the offseason, I think that's only a big deal because there's a change in coaching. And some people will argue that the change in coaching staff erases draft capital. I don't buy that. I still think it matters, and the fact that the undrafted guy is missing time while the third round pick is going to be there and show why he was a third round pick, I am a big Royce Freeman fan, just to throw it out there, is going to hurt Philip Lindsay. I'm with you. I'm all about that Cinderella story. I you know, Adam Thielen and all, you know, shout out Jake again. This will be a good thing to talk about Jake as opposed to razzing him for anything and his Thielen love. But yeah, changing over with low changeover in front office with low draft capital, it, to me, just doesn't matter how good you were. It's scary. You know, happened with Jordan Howard, happened with the Rams 3 times. It happened with, I had more examples and I'm blanking now just because I don't know why. But yeah, I like Philip Lindsay. I want him to be a thing. I have zero shares of him, I think, at this point, because it's not worth the risk.
Yeah, and I did a quick search looking at, like, running backs aren't comparable to Lindsay. None of these guys look very much alike, but, you know, running backs drafted outside the third round or undrafted that had 800-yard seasons. And then I looked at their market share the next year, and about 70% of them lost some market share or percentage of rushing attempts the following year after an 800 or above yard rushing season. And about 50 to 53%, depending how you play with a sample, whether you want, you know, a whole career or just in their first 3 years or whatever. But about 50 to 53% lose more than 10%. And if he loses more than 10% of rushing attempts, that's... he's still a top 24 running back, but I think the upside is decidedly crushed. Because I think if Lindsay loses more than 10%, then, you know, it goes to Freeman. And I think it's probably more than 10%, right? If that makes logical sense. The only way I can think of him losing that much as, you know, more than 50% of kind of similar situation running backs do. Like, the reasons for that are all it going to someone else, Denver focusing Royce Freeman or something else. I mean, the NFL is going to prove that we knew nothing because every season is decidedly unpredictable, but I think reasonable assumptions can say Lindsay is clearly a top 24 running back, but he has some risk if you want to take him inside the top 15. So, yeah, undrafted guys, I'm all for. It's just... I think Lindsay definitely proved he has the talent. I'm not even, like, I'm not the guy to be concerned with his height, size, or speed, or athleticism. That's just not my process. But I have noticed a distinct trend for NFL teams to fade them at every position when they can or when they want to.
Well, even just fantasy-wise, how long did it take for Doug Baldwin to actually get respect in the fantasy community?
Right, exactly. And that's just the fantasy community. And looking at this list of undrafted or outside the first three-round picks, the one you want is clearly, you know, Arian Foster, who's my guy. Yeah. He's like my favorite running back. But even him, I remember his market share fluctuating, the team talking about moving on from him at different times. My memory's fuzzy back in my early heydays of playing fantasy, and that's when Foster was really going. But, like... the other names on this list are Jordan Howard. You can't say the team show much consistency. And before you talk about targets, let's not pretend NFL coaches care about targets as much as fantasy players do. Alfred Morris, he had great seasons as a rusher, not a catcher. And again, these players aren't comparing to Philip Lindsay. It's just these players proved to be quality, but the team was more than willing to move on. Devontae Freeman is probably the other highest note I see on this list. And the team seems to be keeping up faith with him, to be fair.
I mean, they did go and spend on Coleman. They just held on to Freeman longer.
The NFL fades unicorns at a faster rate of knots than it fades drafted unicorns, if that makes sense.
All right, since we're talking about unicorns, what's your unicorn in the first round of rookie drafts?
Look at you trying to keep me on track.
There you go.
I love you so much.
I let you ramble for a little bit, but we're going to get this back on track. Who's a rookie you're not leaving the first round without?
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is the guy I'm getting mid to late. Like, after the fifth pick, there's really no one tempting me more than J.J. unless, you know, I want some exposure to those tight ends. Who's your guy?
Well, I do love me some Sega, and I get him... I said first round, but really anywhere between, like, the 110 to the 202... You know, Sega's my guy in that area. Zach Reed has ruined me, and I now love Paris Campbell.
Right. There is a, you know, I've got the feeling that the pit of doom is waiting on the ground ahead of me in the 2019 season. I'm going to fall into another dark, dank Michael Thomas chasm. But I'm remaining strong. I'm sticking through the process. We're working through it in therapy. But yeah, Paris Campbell worries me from a sometimes you just can't see a player coming. It's a really rare event that a player produces that poorly compared to others in the way I evaluate how they perform compared to others. But it happens.
See, the flaw in your process is that you actually have a process in the first place.
There you go. I should just draft who Zach
just well, yes, that is brilliant. But also, you make it up as you go along. And if you just keep talking, people will forget that you were wrong 20 minutes ago. I feel like that's my mantra. Keep talking.
Isn't that the most tilting? That's the most frustrating thing about trying to do this, like, a lot. It's like everyone can say whatever they want. And next year, even if they admit to saying it, it's like a dulled comeuppance. Like, everyone's like, yeah, whatever. Like, like if the power of getting it wrong was next week, I think people would be slammed with it so hard. But right now you can say like Paris Campbell produced well, and it doesn't matter if 2 weeks later I'm on a podcast saying actually he didn't produce well at all. I mean, he might fit through that gap. I'm more than willing to admit there are things I can't see in numbers that other people are evaluating that I can't get numbers on. But like, God, I try, like, one of my favorite things is admitting what went wrong and trying to find out what went wrong. And then if I can't, like really tilting over the fact that I can't see Michael Thomas coming. I still could not see Michael Thomas coming unless I just went Drew Brees. Like, that's the only thing that would have saved me. And, that, you know, I can't do that every year. Like, but
that's the best part about Dynasty. You could always be like, no. It needs time. Just, you know, you can't judge yet. You can't judge yet. Third year breakout. No, sometimes it happens in the fourth. I mean, come on.
Yeah, right. Don't embrace a hot take. Embrace a hot failure. That's where the fun is, guys. Come in on this. Speaking of which, who is the guy you're finally admitting, look at me, segueing,
love it,
that you were wrong on, that you can finally cut from your rosters, that you're going to stop holding out that long shot hope so you can add some more long shot hopes?
2016 wide receivers that are not named Michael Thomas or Sterling Shepard. Just in general. Besides them, because, you know, clearly they're awesome and or very good. But yeah, Corey Coleman and Josh Doctson, I'm willing just to say goodbye at this point. Whether that means dropping them from my team to go pick up show favorite Greg Dortch, like I'm about to do in one of my leagues. hopefully, you know, my waiver claim goes through tomorrow before you release this and people in my league listen. or if it just means, I'll make sure to talk really long so you have to edit. Either whether it means actually dropping them or just not expecting anything from them anymore, I'm finally there.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with that. I like the idea that you've got a year limit. Like, that's similar to the rules I have when I'm looking through and who can I trim or, you know, try to trade for a third or whatever. Getting past that third year is a big strong mark for me. The more draft capital, the worse it is. I think you can hold on to some of those lower drafted guys a little longer because it takes longer for them to get opportunity. That makes sense to me. But the higher drafted they are, the more militant I am about cutting them by that third year if they haven't done much. Injuries as well, like, it shouldn't be true, but if you get your early years cut short by injuries, the hit rate after that is still not great. Even if they recover and still have a first-round draft capital. It just seems
so I should let go of my Kevin White shares, is what you're saying?
Yeah, you should probably do that.
I don't have any. I'm just kidding.
Do you have any tight end or running back rules? Or it's a lot easier to make them with wide receiver. That's why I'm asking.
No, tight ends, honestly, I will always have like 8 of them on my squad. Just right, because who the hell knows? Yeah, like I'll have the 2 that I plan on starting, and then I'll have 18 shares of Caleb Wilson on my, you know, for the next 5 years.
Speaking of which, you mentioned Greg Dortch, but I don't want to throw you a curveball out here. Like, who's the guy? Like, one of the things we always end up saying way too late into the offseason is, by the way, don't forget to pick up last year's players instead of this year's players. Because they've been in the NFL a while, and it seems we always wait till we've added them. I think that's the trick. So I want to get it out here right now. Who's the guy from last year or the year before, any position, that you're actually trying to add instead of, you know, the Greg Dortches of this year's class?
I mean, I had a lot of Dan Arnold on my team, but, you know, the Jared Cook thing might have killed that. Though, I mean, Cook's like 100 in football years, even though he's like 27. So I'm still... I'm holding on to my Dan Arnold shares just because the dude looked pretty good. He dropped the ball a few times in the end zone, no less, but he looked super athletic. And Jared Cook hasn't hanged around. Those are words anywhere. Right. Yeah. Don't correct me.
Oh, that was so cold. I loved it.
He hasn't been on one team for all that long. So there's no reason for him to stay on this team for all that long. So there's a chance he'll be something. So I have a lot of him. I wanted Jake Butt to be a thing so bad. That got killed.
Right. I'm trying to scroll through my teams. Same with Jeff Heumann, same depth chart.
Steven Anderson is on the Patriots, and now Austin Seferian Jenkins is not.
Have people forgotten about Mark Andrews yet? Like, I'm waiting for that to happen. So I
yeah, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
Oh, it'll happen. Just, you know, I'll just wait for it. Like, everyone's forgotten about Max Williams now. How about Adam Shaheen? Is he forgotten in the dust yet?
Yes. He shouldn't be. He shouldn't be. But, I mean, I have a decent amount of shares because I was a fan of him before. And, well, I did buy into the Trey Burton hype a bit. I never let go of Shaheen. And towards the end of last year, once he was healthy, they used him right away.
Malcolm Mitchell certainly isn't an option.
I was a big fan of him.
Rashad Higgins is a name still kind of under the wire for me. I think he's done enough. And obviously in Cleveland, man, you can't project any opportunity. It's just he's done well in the league with what he's been given. He's getting to that third year line, but he's someone I'm holding on to. I mentioned a lot of these guys last
episode. I put a pickup,
so I don't want to go over it again. But
I put a bid on him, Higgins, in the same league. I put a bid on Dortch.
I keep feeling like you've got a name stashed and you don't want to tell us because of all your trade addict leagues.
Oh, I'm not that clever.
We got nothing to go out on.
Let's talk about
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, especially because I'm terrible at trading. I've got a few, and you know, I'm trying to learn in TradeX 7 and listening to you guys on your podcast because I kind of suck at it. Like, Jake's a master of it. But, like, I have my value lines, and, like, I'm bad for several different reasons. One is I target players, and I know you're not meant to, but, like, if I want something, I just send offers on them. Like, I don't spam or send out voluminous numbers of trade offers because I want that thing. I want that guy, and so that's what I go and try and buy. And I get that's bad process. I'm learning that's bad process. And the other thing is, like, I have a value line, and if the trade seems to be over that, I'm like, sure. Like, I can be the easiest or the hardest guy to trade with in the world, depending on whether you just hit my personal random value line. Like, I don't think either are particularly good for being a quote-unquote good trader.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with either of those. I mean, I'll be honest, I do both.
Well, there is, in that you see Jake jumping around building a mega team with his trades, and I'm sat there with, like, N'Keal Harry, Christian Kirk going, well, guess I'm in productive struggle.
If maybe you only do trade offers for specific guys that you're looking for, as opposed to just trying to gain value in the non-point scoring season, that it's not bad. It's just not helping, I guess, to say, to try and make it sound nicer than it really is when you're sitting and watching Jake build his monster. But no, I absolutely will. I have, in Trade Addicts 5, I've been going hard after Devonta Freeman. Like, I built this team to where I'm pushing for this year. And I think Devonta Freeman's a great this year piece. And, like, I offered 3 trades within, like, a month, let's just say. And then this guy counters with something that's just like, why the hell would I pay that for Devonta Freeman? And he's like, you clearly want him, so you're going to have to pay for him. I'm like, that's not how this works. But, you know, he has a value, and I will pay his value, but I'm not dumb. And that goes to what you were saying before. You have your value line. And if he offered me something that maybe I'm not thrilled with, but was within the value of me still getting him and being happy with having him on my team, I would absolutely do it. But he was asking for way over that value line. So she's like, never mind. I know I want him, but no. Like, you know, I'm a trade addict, but I'm not stupid.
I think we've got several perfect outs right there. One, where you're trying to be nice while telling me, yeah, you're right, you're bad at this. And two, that last line there, like, I'm an addict, but not stupid. I think that's pretty good, too. I think I'll get out of here just because you have a family and a life. And, you know,
yeah, but they're all sleeping.
If they still recognize me, I do, too. So, and mostly it's the fear of having to edit this down to 30 minutes that's got me going. But if there's anything else you want to mention or hype, like, is there something going on that you're doing right now? Like, we haven't talked about Scott Fishbowl 9. How excited are you for that? Let's go.
Literally jumped out of my chair when that email came in.
Right.
Last year, I had to wait like 3 weeks into the invites before I got mine. This year, we're in that group chat DM with like 50 dudes, and I forgot who it was, but they got their invite and they're like, oh, invites go out. And I'm like, oh man, I can't, am I gonna get mine? What's going on? And then ding. Oh, that suspense didn't last very long. Like, I got mine, like, instantly. And I'm just, like, I jump out of my chair, and I'm at work, and I'm like, there's no human being in my vicinity that I can go and tell what just happened, and they won't look at me like I'm a crazy person.
That's the problem with fantasy, actually, because there's literally no one in real life, most of us know, that would understand any of it. That would leave, what are you talking about, dude? You still play that? I thought that was something 9-year-olds do.
Well, it's not even, like, I have home leagues. It's just that they, like, my home leagues don't use Twitter. It's like, that's how much of a home league it is. So they have no idea what the Scott Fish Bowl is. They have no idea who Scott Fish is. So it's just like, what's that? What's this really big tournament with all these people and all this stuff? They're like, oh, I mean, with all those people, why is that even fun? I hate you. God damn.
You don't get this, and you don't have the stuff, and that's okay. But you don't have. Speaking of which, I'm really bad at lots of things, including actually telling anyone listening to us things that, you know, you might need to know about this podcast. One is that we have Jake managed to earn us a golden ticket from Scott Fish. So if you want into the Scott Fish Bowl, all you have to do is leave a rating and review of the Dynasty Crossroads and DM the Crossroads handle at Dino Crossroads. A picture of that with your name and screenshot and email and stuff like that, and you could win a golden ticket to get in the Scott Fish Bowl. So make sure you do that, because, you know, Jake's all professional and business-like and stuff.
And wait, speaking of, start hitting up Jake at Jake Anderson FF and at Fantasy Graphics for your Scott Fish Bowl avatar for Twitter.
That's why you're here, man. That and so many other reasons. Yeah, I was also going to say, I see t-shirts posted a lot, specifically by you, Mr. Outhouse. We do have t-shirts for the Crossroads, are available on Twitter, but what I was actually going to say is the Scott Fish Bowl t-shirts are now out. While I like it when people so buy ours, those are really, really cool. You've got a like a Sega design, and then you've got one that looks like Sal. It looks like at 2QB, the guy who runs 2QBs.com, who's
because
just the nicest
it's
guy.
Mario.
And seeing, yeah, and it no, it's Sal. And seeing his bright and shiny face streak across a shirt is just something I think everyone should experience. So go to RotoWare or go to Scott Fishbowl website and check out those t-shirts. Those are the ones I think we should all go buy, because all the money goes to Fantasy Cares, which, you know, is something we can all do to feel a little bit better about spending so much time playing fantasy football. So check those out. Anything else, dude?
No, I was going to start rambling about something else completely unrelated to keep this podcast going, but I think I'll, all right. So I got offered Brandon Cooks for Tyler Boyd in the 2021st. My problem is that makes sense value wise.
Sorry, I keep interrupting you, dude. Finish.
No, what the 2021st offers, it's because everyone already spent their 2020s and we don't know what else to do. That's right. The real answer. This is now the future first.
I was
going to
ask about Brandon Cooks' value. It seems so cold.
Because nobody knows what to do. Twitter hates Brandon Cooks, but he is very good at football and produces every single year. The problem is, I am ruined on Tyler Boyd. I love him for way too much for some reason. And while I understand the two of them aren't necessarily comparable as NFL players, like, Tyler Boyd put up as many points as Brandon Cooks did. And I don't know if that's something that can consistently happen, but Boyd missed time. He had AJ Green up and down, but he also still did well regardless if AJ Green was on the field or not. And there's another guy that was a third year breakout that, you know, you should have held on to, which
I did.
I didn't draft him in the first place, so I didn't have to hold on to him or not.
I was going to say, you don't have to convince me on Tyler Boyd. He's one of the ones that hit last year, which that's one of my problems right now. All my sleepers hit. Apart from Leon,
that's not a problem.
But like, Boyd hit last year, and who else was it that I'd been hanging on to and arguing for years? But they all just had good seasons, apart from Rashad Penny, obviously, and Leonte Carew.
I really think you do not have a hard time ever finding something to argue about.
That's true.
That's part of your charm.
That's the God's honest truth, right there. I guess it's going to be Whiteside and Isabella for the next 3 years. Let's face it, or Nikhil Harry and DJ Moore.
It doesn't matter if Sega does anything this year. The fact that Alshon's going to be gone after this year, his value is going to skyrocket.
Harry and DJ Moore are actually too highly drafted. They can't be it. Man. They can't be be it. But yeah, are you a
Curtis Samuel guy, maybe.
I mean, I think it's fine.
Well, yeah, if you don't like good. Paris, then you don't like Curtis Samuel. They're practically the same thing.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks. Mr. Outhouse declared that Curtis Samuel is exactly the same thing as Paris Campbell. I don't know if that's good or bad or what, but whatever it is, that's what
it is. Or if it's even true, I just felt like saying it. It's not true, but, you know, they went to the same school, so it's fine.
Right. I'll just cut that bit out. It's fine.
leave it in. It's fine.
I'm going to leave it all in. I'm seriously thinking this will be our first unedited podcast.
Absolutely, just drop it. Except for that like blank when you were looking something up. Maybe you want to cut that out a little bit.
And that bit where you just mentioned it.
No, leave that part you leave in.
Leave that in. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm learning the Trade Addict's way. I'm on my way to become an expert trader, or if not, politely told that I'm bad at training, and also an expert podcaster. I appreciate you do so much. You do so much for me, Outhouse. I appreciate it. But thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you trying to fill in for Jake here and providing some sort of stability. Because without Jake, seriously, the sirens, people running around the background, it's like someone just declared nuclear war. It looks like the war room probably will whenever that happens, which I think is due pretty soon, actually. That should be exciting.
Yeah, probably within the next month or two.
Thanks for trying to save me for myself. I really appreciate you and Jesse from last week. Hopefully I'll be able to have both of you on again. Because we are predicting many, many weeks where Jake isn't going to be able to be available because, you know, kids and family are kind of important or whatever.
I guess.
So hopefully we'll see you again and you'll be able to teach me some more stuff about podcasting and trading. I appreciate that.
And also about
why my office sucked. That'd be great. So thanks, dude. No, I really appreciate it. Check out Dynasty Outhouse at Dynasty Outhouse. One of the most appreciated thing about Dynasty Outhouse is that his trade handle, or Twitter handle rather, is actually his name, Dynasty Outhouse. I think more of us should do that, frankly. Instead of the FF and the underscores, we should all be called our names. That'd be great.
So should I start calling you Pa?
I really should have asked you how your parents knew to call you Dynasty Outhouse, like where that second name comes from and shit.
But, well, Outhouse is a family name. You know,
that's
Dynasty, like that's why I fell into Dynasty Fantasy Football, just because I knew it would fit.
That's what I would have done. Most rambling pod ever, and also the most rambling outro ever. I think we're just about hitting perfection here, dude. But yeah, again, I'm sorry I'm not great at this. Come on again when Jake's around, if nothing else, and he'll like show you he knows what he's doing. And that'll be
great. We will do our best to derail him from trying to do that.
Obviously. Let's go, man. Let's
just say goodbye, Peter.
Bye.
You're at the Dynasty Crossroads that Film and Analytics create. The Dynasty Crossroads that Film and Analytics create. Crunches numbers and Jake just grinds that tape. It's the Dynasty Crossroads where film is everything. The Dynasty Crossroads where numbers are the king. There may not be consensus, but we'll give you everything.